the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site, covering your Arizona Cardinals. My co-host on the line with me is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the hosts of the Original Draft Breakdown podcast. It is episode 480. And this is interesting because we hit trade deadline and the Cardinals made a trade. This is what's going on with the quarterback position plus week 8 review and reaction. Seth, we have to start with this. We thought, you know, it went kind of like last week. Kayvon Wallace went from being, hey, we're playing every snap, to you're benched, to you're cut. This is what happened to Josh Dobbs this week, playing every snap for 8 weeks after the game on Sunday as a 31-24 loss to the Baltimore Ravens at home. It wasn't that close, but it became that close. We'll talk about that part. It got out of hand a lot because of Dobbs' play, and it got close because of Dobbs' play at the same time. But after the game, Jonathan Gannon made it very clear that Josh Dobbs is still the starting quarterback. Monday, he comes out and says, nah, we talk things through, and it's either going to be Kyler or Clayton Tune. Kyler was, of course, right on the edge of that three-week practice window where he's going to be reactivated and move into the starting lineup. So Dobbs goes from being playing every snap to being got the vote in confidence. Gannon gave him the absolute vote of confidence. He never once thought about moving from him during the game. Said he's the guy, I trust him. To the next day, benched. And now Tuesday, as it's Tuesday afternoon, a few hours after the trade deadline, Josh Dobbs is no longer a Cardinal. They traded him to the Minnesota Vikings. What in the – how does that happen? Now, Minnesota needed a quarterback. Kirk Cousins tore his Achilles, so they're left with the rookie Jaren Hall.
Apparently Kirk Cousins is not Aaron Rodgers, who can come back in.
Well, and now it's mid-season, so.
Record-setting time to play. I got to get whatever that guy's got.
Well, Aaron Rodgers, I think he's been talking to Tom Brady and whatever robot things that he's becoming a cyborg. Because Tom Brady's a cyborg, haven't we kind of?
Yeah, exactly. And so, it's one, I mean, obviously, I think you and I kind of both agree, like, thank you for the 8 games, Josh Dobbs. Like, you did the most you could. Without taking a shot or not, taking 0 shots at Josh Dobbs, neither one of us had high expectations. So I think you.
And there was a stretch he played better than either one of us thought he could.
Right. And so you cleared expectations. You did a nice job. And now you're off to your next adventure in life. And we'll see how that works out for you. And hopefully it works out extremely well. Because, the one thing that everybody's going to tell you about Dobbs more than anything else is he's a fantastic, fantastic person. I don't think anybody has a negative word to say about him as a person. And so sometimes we get so caught up in the NFL football thing, we kind of forget about that stuff. And so I think that's always, a good thing to remember is like we're talking about a guy that, got a great chance for the first time in his career, made the most of it. Like you said, we saw the highs and the lows of who he is as a quarterback, and he had some career games, including against, the San Francisco 49ers. But it's time to move on, and hopefully that is a sign of things to come in the sense of who's going to be activated soon. We'll talk about that, but, the Dobbs era was what it was.
So much for legacy backup, right?
Right. And you know, you and I were always steadfast on everything that was happening. None of it meant anything in terms of starting, right? Like, we were always just kind of like, hey, he's doing a really nice job as a backup. Like, and that was basically where we left it. And you and I never, because we've been here for too long, partially, but you and I never bought in or fell into the hype train of that he could be a starter. Like, we're like, no, maybe. But that thing is, like, when we talked about it, like, we were of the idea that, hey, that 3-game stretch, that New York, Dallas, San Francisco stretch, we were like, man, if you get that from him as a backup in 2 to 3 games, like, you take that 10 times out of 10.
Oh, absolutely.
But you also saw that once you get to about week 3 or 4 of him starting, it's going to start to catch up to you. And those are things that happen. And, you know, Godspeed in Minnesota. I hope he plays every game and the Cardinals recoup that 7th round pick that they sent with him. Actually, Jess and I hope that they don't, just so they don't have that 7th round pick in the draft. But from an accounting, winning a trade perspective, we hope that they recoup that 7th round pick.
Wait, I was a little confused by how that came through, because it made it sound like, so here's the deal, is the initial deal. The Cardinals sent Dobbs and a conditional 7th round pick to the Vikings for a 6th round pick. So essentially, Josh Dobbs was not worth a draft pick. He was worth a round in a draft, right? That's, if we're just going by straight value, he is worth a round up.
Right.
But what I saw, and let me have to pull that up.
I've got it right here from John Gambadoro.
Okay. Because what came through with Rappaport, it made it sound like that depending on what happens, is that 7th would have to be higher.
No, so if Dobbs starts half the Vikings games remaining, the Cardinals get the 7th round pick back. So the Cardinals get a 6th from Minnesota, and then they gave them Dobbs and their 7th. And then if he starts, so I guess there's 9 games left. I don't know if they've had their bye or not. So they either have 9 or 10 games left. So I'm guessing, I don't know how that would work. 5, we'll just call it 5 for easy math. If he starts 5 games, they get that 7th round pick back.
Oh, so essentially it will have been Dobbs for a 6th.
Correct.
And so he then, if he plays, if he starts 5 games, he won't be worth a round. He'll be worth a draft pick.
Correct. So,
yeah, because if that makes more sense, that makes a lot more sense to me than what I saw initially. I'm trying to pull up. Where was that? Now, what the, like, really? The 49ers trading for Chase Young is that they're stealing. Why?
Well, I think a lot of it is his contract's going to be out of control if he plays well. And then if he doesn't, it's really hard to see him. They haven't been good in terms of or health-wise for him, right? So, like, I think that's where they're getting to with that. I'm not saying I agree or disagree. That's just, I think, where they're at with it. So, you know, I was reading a lot of takes today, and some of the takes, you know, obviously what the Chicago Bears are doing is always interesting. They traded for Montez Sweat, who, you know, would probably be an absolutely phenomenal fit in the Cardinals. But would you trade, let's just say, 33 for Montez Sweat and the right to pay him, I would guess, $120 million over 5 years? Like, so it just, it makes it tough to eat that, whereas the Niners are basically giving up a third with the idea that if he plays well, we'll try to sign him to a huge deal. If he doesn't play well, it's a third round compensatory pick because they'll get an extra pick from having Rand Carthen and who was their DC last year? D'Amico Ryans, you know, get hired away for the diversity hiring program. So it is one of those situations where, you know, if you're the 49ers, it makes sense just to take a shot. But like for a team like the Cardinals, who you're like, why not you do it? Well, Chase Young hasn't lived up to the hype. He hasn't been bad by any stretch of the imagination, but like you can't give up a third round pick and I don't, you know, we don't know what compensatory picks they have for a guy that has never played a full season. And since his outstanding rookie year where he was the defensive rookie of the year and a Pro Bowler, he has 6.5 sacks, 5 of those sacks coming this year in his, you know, contract year because they didn't pick up his.
Yeah.
So it's a really hard justification for a team like the Cardinals. You know, this isn't Brian Burns last year. I'm trying to think of some of the other pass rushers that have moved at the deadline. You know, this wouldn't be like trading for Max Crosby of the Raiders. This is legitimately just like, this would be like if the Cardinals traded Kyler Murray, you'd probably get similar, like right now, you know, without him having played at all.
Yeah.
You would have got probably a third, maybe a second, you know, and then if he plays well, oh, and obviously the difference is Kyler's sign, but like, you know, that's the type of thing you're doing. You're taking a shot on a guy that hasn't, I mean, literally in 21 and 22, he had 1.5 sacks and 5 quarterback hits in 2 seasons. And he played a combined 12 games. Yes. Like you're just hoping that he stays healthy for the first time since 2020 and that he's a guy that regains that form. And you know, the Cardinals just right now aren't in a position to do something like that. And like you said, it sucks that it ended up being San Francisco, but at the same time, you look at it, it's the reality that probably nobody else was willing to even come close to that, right?
Yeah, probably. I found the tweet that had me a little confused because it was from Adam Schefter. There are conditions attached to the trade that can turn the 7th round pick that's Arizona sent to Minnesota into a 6th round pick, per source. So, you know, because it made it sound like it was Dobbs in a 7th for a 6th, but it could be Dobbs in a 6th for a 6th. I'm like, wait, what?
Right.
Basically, yeah, almost making like it sound they were just giving away Dobbs.
Right.
Potentially. Which would make it like, at least the way it's right now, Dobbs is worth a round up in the draft. If that were to be the case, then he's not worth anything in the draft, especially right. Because now... Yeah, because we don't, like, as of right now, like, it would be moving back, right?
Right, exactly. And so that's just how you have to look at it. And, you know, one of the things that you and I have, you know, talked about off the air, and so you just kind of look at what he's done well this year, and he being Monty Osmond, is really see the value of the players on the roster or understand what their value is. And what I mean by that is, you know, a high number, including you and I, were very surprised to see them trade away Josh Jones. Well, I can, as somebody that was high on Josh Jones, incredibly high on Josh Jones, you know, it pains me to say this, but he's been terrible in Houston and hasn't played since week 3. A lot of people, you and I were not two of them, we both were very, I'm trying to think of the, how I would describe our feeling on losing Byron Murphy, but both of us were like, if you can get him for a reasonable price, that would have been ideal, right? Like you and I were both that way. But what he got from from Minnesota, I don't think was reasonable. He's been, and I'm not taking a shot at a guy. This is just reality. He's been borderline awful for the Vikings. He's been one of the worst cover corners in the NFL this year.
So weird.
And that's not to say he wouldn't help Arizona, because one of the worst cover corners in the NFL that plays every down would still be better than, you know, what they've had. But if you're looking to obviously, you know, grow this franchise, then you can't have that, you know, just weighing you down, even if it's just a 2-year, you know, $18 million contract, which again, you and I were both kind of like, that doesn't seem so bad for all the needs they have. But, you know, obviously, again, I give praise to Monty. He kind of saw it. Same, you know, can be said for Isaiah Simmons. He's played 36% of the snaps. He's started one game, and he plays for one of the worst defenses in the NFL. I mean.
And that defensive guru in Wink Martindale has not been able to unlock him.
Right.
Any more than Vance Joseph or anyone could.
Right. And you know, even last game, you look at it, I mean, he had one pass defense. That was coming off, you know, not playing in Buffalo or playing well against Washington, not playing in Buffalo. And it's just interesting. Yeah, he's just not playing. You know,
it's almost honest, like his best fit was in Vance Joseph's defense, even as
right.
as odd as it looked, because sometimes it didn't feel like he was a fit, but Vance actually got a lot out of him.
Right. And, you know, you look at it, he played 11 snaps against Buffalo the week after playing every snap in the Miami game. And outside of that Miami game, he's playing less than 40% of snaps every game. Like, ooh. And so when people are like, you only got a seventh round pick, well, he's playing about the equivalency of a fifth, sixth round pick. And, you know, obviously his contract makes that a little higher. So, and then obviously, again, the last guy, Zach Allen, has been a bust thus far. Which is the oddest one, right? Because
he was going to the same defense.
Right. So, you know, it's just been, so that's the one thing I'll say. Like, I'll give Monty the benefit of the doubt, because while I, you know, we both were kind of intrigued, I guess is the best way to put it, with why they traded for Josh Dobbs in the first place. You know, he's understood the value or what the guy has better than we have, and you know, gotten something out of it. So we'll see how that continues to work out. Obviously, the biggest difference here being that, you know, they basically lost a round to lose seven games with Josh Dobbs as their quarterback. And that's just a reality. I mean, there's nothing, not trying to take a shot or anything. That's what it has
well,
been.
Well, in fairness, and when they knew that Colt wasn't going to be the guy, we know about the quarterback tax and the fact that it's that Minnesota would have to trade anything to acquire Josh Dobbs, and what he's done this year is testament to that. Now, let's roll it back to what this means, because there was talk that Kyler would be activated this past week. I didn't think it would happen because he was getting full reps in practice, but it came down. It wasn't full reps with the first team. But now there's only two quarterbacks on the team, and technically only one on the active roster, and that's Clayton Toon. Gannon said it would either be Kyler or Toon who starts, and we can assume. Gannon did say today on Tuesday he wasn't scheduled to talk to reporters. He did speak to reporters briefly today and did say they would add a third quarterback. I can only assume that that means Jeff Driskel. Now, the roster decision that they're going to make is going to be interesting, because as things stand right now, it would look like you would have to activate Kyler. But Adam Schefter, and now he didn't tweet this on Monday, but it was in Josh Weinfuss's story for ESPN that when Dobbs was announced as benched, that Schefter was told by sources that the Cardinals will start Toon on Sunday. It's an interesting move to start Toon on Sunday when you don't have Josh Dobbs on the roster. It's an interesting move to start Toon if you're going to activate Kyler and not have any other quarterback on the roster. So it would suggest the way things look right now, it seems like a foregone conclusion that Kyler will be activated and back up Toon. That seems highly interesting to me. Like, that feels like that's a decision you make to activate your franchise quarterback and start the rookie fifth rounder for his NFL debut, and therefore put Kyler in a position to where if they don't think he's ready, that he might have to go into a game even less ready because Toon gets hurt. There is the possibility that the Cardinals can play with the roster. And I think it'll ultimately come down to what they do with that third quarterback. I will assume that by the time you hear this show, when it drops on Wednesday, that it will have been Jeff Driskel that they bring back. Now, if they sign him to the active roster, that gives the Cardinals a little bit of flexibility, because the NFL has this third quarterback rule, where if you have an inactive third quarterback on game day, who then can be active in the case of both quarterbacks that are active being hurt. There was a problem with that. There are a couple of caveats to that. It has to be a quarterback. You already have to be burning a spot on for 53-man roster for that third quarterback. He cannot be a practice squad elevation. Jeff Driskel was on the practice squad up until last week or a couple weeks ago when Kyler was designated to return and Kyler went back to practice. If Jeff Driskel is signed to the practice squad, he cannot be the emergency quarterback. Here's what we could see, though. If they sign Driskel to the active roster, okay, if they sign him to the active roster on Wednesday, making him the backup, even if they activate Kyler, so one, it could make it so they just decide not to activate Kyler this week until next week, when he'd be set to play, which is kind of what we were all looking at. We've all been looking at that Atlanta game. But if they activate Kyler this weekend, you could make Kyler the emergency third, and you have Toon start. I think you can't. So Driskel could be the backup. You keep Murray deactivated. He doesn't dress, but he does dress because he could then come in as the emergency third quarterback only. Like, he's ready to play, but not ready to play. And I think that might be the option. Because, I don't know, Seth, if Kyler's ready to come off of PUP and be activated, but not, like, wouldn't it make sense to get him in the lineup? There's a couple lines of thought, but to you, would it make sense that if you're going to activate him, why not have him play?
Yeah, and why not get him out there and get him going and...
Because what if Toon gets hurt and you have to play him anyway?
Right. Well, I guess the only thing I would question, and I'm looking right now, is if they're concerned about like weather on Sunday, because it is Cleveland, and it's supposed to rain Monday and Tuesday in Cleveland. Now, Sunday, it's supposed to be 60 and sunny, so who knows? But it's supposed to rain Monday and Tuesday, and we know how weather changes in the Midwest as opposed to here where it never changes and you're just stuck, right? So I guess we'll just see how that kind of works out.
I had a question.
Yeah.
Would they bring back Colt?
No, I don't think so. I mean,
I would think it's Jeff Driscoll, but would they bring back Colt McCoy?
Right.
I mean, they're already paying him, by the way. They're already paying him.
Right. How does that work? Would they pay him more? Or does he
well, that contract is null and void unless they, well, I guess if there's offset language, then because he would get signed to, they would sign him to like the minimum deal, but it would either be he gets paid whatever prorated amount for the rest of the season or however long he's on the roster plus the $2.25 million he was already due, or it would be it counts as the offset language, and it would just be playing instead of, you know, sitting at home. I don't know. I just came to mind. I would be shocked if it's not Jeff Driscoll because he was with the team all through the offseason. It would make sense for him to be the second quarterback if you didn't want Kyler to have to play.
Right, and I think that makes the most sense.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's look back at the game against the Ravens. We'll look at the good. Maybe we won't be talking long with that. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. The best hour of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's talk about the Ravens game, the 31-24 loss. The good. Was there, in your opinion, any good team-wise from that game?
Yeah, I thought, again, the defense looked like it's coming into form. You know, it's been a struggle for this defense. I think you and I have covered that kind of ad nauseum. But to see them against a team that literally just put up a breezy, almost, 500 yards of total offense the week before against a superior team. I mean, let's just be honest. The Lions are far and away better than the Cardinals. To see them hold the Ravens to less than 300 total yards of offense. You know, I think Lamar finished with under 200 yards passing, which I'm sure for everybody gambling was not the way you wanted to see it. But
yeah, he had 157. Now his rating was solid, but yeah, it was really interesting.
But I mean, his rating at 94.2 is a huge step down from like what he did the week before. And they did put up 500 yards of offense. So I was right. Yeah, so 503 yards of offense the week before. You know, this was the second least amount of yards that they've put up all season. And so to see that happen against the Cardinals was impressive. You know, the one glaring thing that the defense didn't do this week is just force a turnover. But I mean, outside of that, I think you're happier with things.
And what really, they weren't hurt by anything other than pass interference penalties.
Yeah. And
Antonio Hamilton really struggled with Odell Beckham
from, I think it was Antonio Hamilton had a couple, you know, to see the guys that, you know, we expect it from Starling Thomas, right? Like, we're not shocked when Starling Thomas struggles. But to see it from the veterans, which just, I mean.
Well, I mean, Beckham hasn't had a great year. And we know that Hamilton is scrappy. But Hamilton versus Odell, that's not a matchup that. Like, you got him one-on-one. That makes sense why Hamilton. And Hamilton is a scrappy physical player, and that's where it got him into trouble. But I think, like, defensively, they only gave up 268 total yards. Now, they did give up 130 rushing yards, but most of that came in the second half when Gus Edwards basically, it was the Gus Edwards show.
Right.
In, well, that one drive.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple other things that we can talk about. I mean, the pass rush continues to be a revelation.
Dante Stills with a sack and a half.
Yeah, I mean, I joked with some buddies. I'm like, you know, can't believe the NFL let Dante Stills fall to the sixth round to the Arizona Cardinals, right? He's only one sack behind the greatest defensive line prospect in the history of mankind, Jalen Carter. So, you know, and it was disappointing to see Zaven Collins get a sack taken off the board, because I thought that was actually the best he's looked from a pass rushing standpoint. And then it just ends up being an incomplete pass. And you're like, oh.
Yeah, that
would have been a nice big play, too, for the team.
Yeah, that would now, ultimately, that play didn't cost them points because Tucker then missed the field goal. But
it did cost them good field position and momentum.
You know what, actually? They had better field position after the missed field goal.
That's true. But,
they had better field position after the missed field goal, which is weird, but still, it would have been when you have that big play taken off the board, it takes the juice off a little bit. And so rather than the offense coming onto the field after the defense did their job, then you've got a missed field goal. It's different. It's different. But yeah, defensively, it really was. They all the metrics, like you look at the metrics, it was pretty solid because they held them to 36% on third down. There were only 268 total yards. The rushing yards were a lot, but they limited Lamar Jackson. So Lamar Jackson didn't hurt him with his legs, didn't hurt him with his arm. And red zone, that was the difference. The red zone was the difference. They went 4-for-4 in the red zone.
Right. And I do wonder if that's going to be a teaching tape. I don't know what the best way to explain it is, but like, if we're going to see other teams implement a similar tactic to what the Cardinals did against Lamar, because it was extremely effective, as you said.
Oh, like, that first sack by Dante Stills, that was so impressive, the discipline that the defensive tackles had, because they didn't over-pursue. It wasn't just chasing him. That was really cool to see. He pursued him to a spot. The nose tackle, you know, kind of slid over to protect that hole for that way Lamar didn't take off. And I know there was coverage down the field too, but that first sack by Stills to me was super impressive, because where you guys get hurt by Lamar is, and we've seen it with the Cardinals and Russell Wilson and Colin Kaepernick back in the day and guys in Kyler Murray, is they over pursue and they lose gap integrity, and you've got an opening for the quarterback. And that first sack, it was just Lamar didn't have anywhere to go, so he had to keep standing in the pocket, and then Stills finally got him.
Yeah, and so to see, you know, the way they did it, and they brought it up on the broadcast, you know, they brought only three, sometimes four, but they would spy with Kaiser, and that's the other thing, is you got to remember, not every team has a Kaiser White that's athletic enough to even hope or dream of spying Lamar, right? Like, that's a reality. But yeah, it was great to see. And you know, we'll see if that's something that the rest of the NFL begins to employ and take advantage of. But it's interesting to see them continually.
They gave up 31 points and only 268 yards of offense. I guess I should have waited for the bad, but I'm like, holding a team to 268 yards of offense, that's amazing. That's great.
Yeah, and that's just, you know, that's just a product of the offense turning the ball over, giving the Ravens short field, and then all of a sudden those, you know, like you said, if you don't hold in the red zone, it makes it tough. But I was just, I mean, I continually become impressed with what you see, because, you know, the names of this team, Starling Thomas played very well. Josh Woods, kind of turning into a revelation at inside linebacker, right? You mentioned Dante Stills. We're seeing Garrett Williams and why they were so high on him as a prospect, right? And then to see Buddha and Jalen back for the first time and the difference that they make for this team. I mean, and then we got to see BJ Ojulari get his first sack of his career.
Yep, that was cool.
They're just getting after it. And some of them are guys that you can say, hey, these are building blocks, right? And some of them are just guys that are getting an opportunity that are playing probably above their weight, similar to what we saw with Dobbs at times. But, I mean, to see them continually grow is a cool thing. And I hope that, you know, that's what we take from this season over everything else, is that this is a team that's, you know, if you put, and again, I'm not taking shots at guys, but if you take a Roy Lopez, who's having a nice little, you know, resurgence out, and you add in, whether it's, you know, now the guy's name is escaping me that they signed from the Seahawks, right? LJ Collier, or you bring in a Jerzon Newton out of Illinois, right? With your first round pick, but you're going to be able to scheme those guys up and get something productive out of them. That's kind of how I'm trying to take everything that we're seeing, is that the talent's not great. We know that, but they're getting stuff from their talent, and that's impressive. And you mentioned it during the game, right? You know, again, more pass breakups, more getting their hands on the football a little more.
They had three in their previous four games combined. Three. They had five in the first half. I didn't count up though how many they actually had, so let me pull that up at the end of the day. But they ended up with five. They didn't touch they didn't touch the ball in the second half, which is, you know, when things fell apart. I do want to talk about two positives on offense and their players. Amari DeMarcado, that's so impressive. And I think we've, you know, I love how he doesn't do anything, like he doesn't have any outstanding trait. He's not overly fast. He's not going to have great speed. Doesn't have great size. He's a good pass protector. He can catch the ball all right, but he's smart. He gets the yards he's supposed to get, and sometimes gets a little bit more. He's very, like, he reads his line very well, and is able to find the crease better than we've seen. The thing with Keonta Ingram, yikes. But Amari, he's doing really well with that. And you know, if he can just be that solid number two of James Conner, that's fantastic for an undrafted kid. And then Trey McBride, I think they're turning him to a feature. Like, he's becoming the Zach Ertz in this offense. And it's good to see. And we did see some productive production in garbage time, but garbage time nonetheless. He was 5 yards from being the first 100-yard receiving tight end since, I think, Rob Awalt in 1988. Jeez. It's going to happen. It's going to happen sometime, and we can finally stop talking about that tight end stat.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, it's one of those situations that he's getting an opportunity for the first time, and he's really making the most of it. And it's interesting, to your point, that there are guys on this team or on this roster that were drafted by the previous regime, like a Keonta Ingram, that just are not as good as like an undrafted free agent as an Amari DeMarcado. And it's just interesting. But that's kind of how especially running backs kind of work, right? That you draft a guy like a Ingram, who's a size speed metrics freak, and hope he works out. And you sign a DeMarcado to your practice squad or undrafted, because you look at him and he doesn't necessarily have any metrics that you go, okay, this guy could be a feature back, and you just kind of let him work. And then you're like, oh, this guy's not bad at all. So, yeah. You know, those are always interesting, but, and fun little things. But yeah, I mean, overall, it's just been, it's cool to see these guys play well. And I want to say one more thing about the offense. The first time this year that the Ravens gave up a touchdown on their first drive to their opponent. So, I mean, game script, they got lucky with what we can call a questionable illegal contact by Kyle Hamilton.
Went, you're right. That went from being a three and out to a touchdown drive thanks to that.
And it was, I mean, that's one of those plays that you go, I mean, I'll take it, but if they call that on the Cardinals, I'm going to be furious type of thing, right? Like, because there was no way. So, and so you just look at it. Yeah. So it was, it's just, you know, it was, there was good that came out of this game, 100%. It's just, again, the offense until garbage time when they were really not close. And I, you know, I text you guys, I tweeted about it. Like, when your running back is averaging more yards per carry than your quarterback is throwing, it's a bad day at the office. It just is. I mean, there's nothing, there's just no other way to put it. And that's where they were until the fourth quarter. I mean, entering the third quarter, handing the ball off to Amari DiMercato for just under 4 yards per carry was a more effective offensive play than letting Josh Dobbs throw the ball. And that's basically unheard of. And, and you know,
60 yards on his first 18 pass attempts.
And so to see them finish with nearly 200, you know, again, a lot of it garbage time, or he did finish with over 200. You're right.
He did.
So, you know, 200.
But in fairness, even though it was garbage time, the Cardinals did. So that's the other positive, is that they, even with as bad as they were playing in the second half, somehow made a game of it at the end.
Yeah, they and that's the thing. There was two plays in this game that you look at and you go, these are the plays that decided this game. And again, this isn't a bash on Josh Dobbs. This is just a reality of the situation. And it's right before the half, he throws an inexplicable interception. And what happens? Well, the Ravens go and score 43 yards for a touchdown, take a 14-7 lead at the half. I mean, it's 14-7, it's 7-7 at that point. Worst case scenario. And so I'll put some of that, and you and I have been, I think, nothing but impressed with Drew Petzing so far. And I'll put some of that on Petzing. I mean, you've got a guy at that point who hasn't been good throwing the football. Just, you know, you've already run four plays for 21 yards. Just keep running the ball. Worst case scenario, you go into the half, it's tied. Best case scenario, you get close enough to kick a field goal, or maybe take a shot or two late where it won't affect you to throw an interception, right? But to throw an interception on your side of the field and to have that happen, that's just, was a backbreaker, man. Because here's the other thing that we haven't seen. They come out and they force the Ravens to punt their first three possessions. Like, again, so you talk about that defense. You talk about what that defense did. First three possessions, they forced the Ravens to punt. And that's just one of those situations that we haven't seen. Coming out, I mean, you've talked about it a ton. You come over here and third quarter and you end up, the game gets out of hand usually, right? And until that interception, it's still 14-7. You've had multiple chances to put positive, you know, outcomes on the board offensively. You just haven't done it. And then you throw that backbreaking interception. They only have to go 23 yards to score their second touchdown or their third touchdown and take a two touchdown lead. And at that point, it's almost like, it's just almost to the point where you just go, well,
yeah,
there's nothing you can do.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Mr. Carlos Talk on the Web. Let's talk about the bad. There was plenty of bad, but there was definitely positives. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, Mr. Carlos Talk on the Web. The negatives in the game, I think, you have to stare down Josh Dobbs, and those two interceptions were, oh my gosh. Now, the first one, that was a terrible throw. There was no reason to miss that. And the second one, in fairness, he got basically. The way Gannon said, they gave him a dirty look. They gave him a dirty coverage, and so they fooled him. They fooled him on the second interception, is what happened. But they can't turn the ball over. They just can't afford that. And that's been thing, especially the inaccurate or just the overthrow, is that's the thing that was the hardest to deal with Dobbs, is that when he was taking care of the football, there was still the issue that you couldn't move the ball down the field very well, because unless a guy was wide open, he wasn't going to get it to. And even if he is wide open, it had to be in the middle of the field.
Right. And, you know, you just can't force that pass. And it's another thing. And I'm obviously, we know how the defense is playing, or the defense is set up and playing, makes a big deal to this. But what is your opinion on the fact that those two drives in the fourth quarter, 19 plays, 150 yards, two touchdowns, do you think that is mostly a product of how the Ravens defense was playing? Or do you think that a combination of Dobbs obviously making some mistakes, but Petsing being probably too afraid to take some chances played a role in that? Like, or do you just kind of chalk it up to?
I mostly chalk that up to the Ravens now easing some of the stuff that they were doing up front. Yeah. I would.
Yeah. And I was just curious because, you know, to see them score 17 points in the last, or I know it wasn't 17, but, you know, score two touchdowns and a field goal in the last quarter. It was 17. Yeah, I'm right. And
that was just 17 points in the fourth quarter. They had scored 30 points in the second half, period, of seven games combined.
Right. And so to see them finally do it, it, like you said a little bit, it gives you some hope, but then it's also equally as frustrating because you're like, where has this been?
Well, the fact that's when you look at 268 yards, that's fantastic. The Ravens scored 31 points on 268 yards. That's absurd.
And it's absurd, but you also look at it. It's crazy to think just that. Three of their scoring drives went a total of 103 yards. Like, the Cardinals were playing well defensively. Yeah. Like 103 yards and you gave up 17 points. I mean, in the end, that's the difference in the game. And again, this isn't a crap on Josh Dobbs thing, but like, if your defense is playing that well, you can't. It's really hard to win a game in that situation, because you look at before those 171 yards and 17 points, they were borderline under 150 yards from scrimmage with two interceptions and two turnover on downs. So like, four possessions where they turn the ball over to the Ravens, and their defense still did a nice job. And that's, I mean, you look at, we haven't seen outcomes like this. I mean, the Ravens went three and out three different times. They had multiple drives where they had less than 10 total yards, four total drives where they had less than 10 total yards in that drive. And six total drives where they had 20 or less yards. That's just not something we've seen from the Arizona Cardinals this season defensively, and especially when you take into account who they were playing. And that, I'm not even factoring in the one play for a negative yard. I mean, there's six drives in the middle of the game while the game is in the balance that they gave up 20 yards or less. And the offense responded in those drives in just horrific fashion. And those are hard things to overcome.
Yeah, and this is where your lineup is that of the Ravens' 21 first downs, four of them were by penalty. And, well, and you know, you put give them a pass interference in the end zone, that's always gonna bite you in the rear. They were penalized six times. That's not good. They had the same amount of penalties, both teams. But it was just that overall the offense was outside of DeMarcado for the first three quarters. And I'm wondering, they almost didn't use DeMarcado in the fourth quarter. I don't know if they had a limit in touches that he wanted, or if he, because he had 20 carries, and then it's like he didn't play in the fourth quarter. And so I'm interested to see if he shows up on the injury report this week. But and he was great in the first half, and then the run game stopped being efficient in the second half as well, because he only had, I think it was 18 yards after halftime. And he was averaging, you know, right about 4.4, I think, for the first half, and he finished at 3.9. And so the even the success they were having offensively declined until garbage time.
Yeah, and it's tough, you know, to run the ball from behind anyway. So to see them, you know, like you said, be so effective, that was kind of surprising. I don't want to say shocking, because that makes it sound way more than
well,
it was.
Well, that's the one thing we did say that they could do. They could run the ball on Baltimore. It was just a matter of being in a game situation where you could continue to run the ball.
Yeah, and so we'll see how that works out. With going forward, because God forbid he shows up on the injury report, right?
Like, because Damian Williams is out, like he's on the practice squad injury report, injured reserve. So if DeMarcado is hurt, then it's you're going to have Kent Ingram and Tony Jones,
and Ingram has looked really bad.
Oh,
just like he can't, like he just doesn't understand how to run the football, which is crazy, but yeah. I mean, it explains why he didn't put up numbers in college either, right?
Yeah, it was just weird. You know, it just, it was disappointing. But, I mean, it was disappointing, but it wasn't surprising how the game flow went, right? The game flow went exactly as you predict, as we predicted, only they came back at the very end. I thought that, and we keep talking about, I was trying to talk about the negatives in the game, is that the Cardinals could not convert on fourth down. They had those two replays bite them the butt. Like, I'm not sure. I know in the pool report they said that there were a couple of frames where it was clear that Lamar Jackson had the ball in his hand and was moving forward, maybe. And I get why they moved the spot back, but it just, especially in that situation, why didn't they, like, they've been successful with the, you know, the tush push QB sneak like Philly's done. Why didn't they do that there? Why didn't they do the one thing that they've been quite successful at this year?
Yeah, but you also look at it, there was a couple of plays where Dobbs, this is the difference in a guy that's, you know, backup and a guy that is a starter in the NFL. And one of the things that you see with Dobbs is he just misses so many guys running open. Because what happens is on that first play where he threw it and Michael Pierce Michael Pierce made a nice play getting his hand up and getting the ball batted down, but he misses Hollywood like all he has to do is float the ball out to his left. And Hollywood just runs under it, catches it. I don't know if it's a touchdown, but there's nobody around him. So he runs for until somebody tackles him. Because they just ran a easy mesh concept. And there was, I mean, you have to understand that you're throwing to a spot. And I think that's one of the biggest things that we've seen with Dobbs is he just doesn't a lot of times trust spots. He wants to see a guy open before he throws it. So, you know, and so at the same time, this is where I'm struggling with Petsing. You know, we talked a little bit about it earlier, is if Petsing is just calling the plays like it's what his expectation level is for, let's say, Kyler Murray, right? And he's just like, I'm just going to continue to call the plays, then I'm fine with that. But if he's like, no, Josh Dobbs can do this, I want to be like, have you watched Josh Dobbs play? Because then that's on you. Because like Jess is saying, just go under, shove the quarterback forward for a yard, or run the fake shove toss that everybody's running now, and like, let's just move forward. But like, asking Josh Dobbs to make, you know, process a throw in that time and that quickness, it just seems like it was a foolhardy thing, and you know, it came back to bite them. And then the other one, with they ran it with DeMercado, I still don't understand the spot. I understand now the re-spot because they're being told, oh, he's down a yard back, but that spot doesn't make any sense because it looked like the ball, he had the ball in his arm reaching forward to the original line before they moved it back. Now, I'm not going to blame the officials because they get a call from New York saying this is where the ball should be spotted, but I'd love to know what the spotter replay official saw to dictate that, oh, this is the wrong spot.
It was crazy. Couple of injuries to watch, especially with Elijah Wilkinson now on injured reserve. Tristan Colon only played two snaps before leaving the game with a calf injury, which means Dennis Daly finished the game. Now, that's fine, but it does cut into the depth. Michael Wilson went to the locker room late. We'll have to worry about that. And then we know that Damian Williams, he's done-ish. I doubt he would be a guy that they designate to return because you can only do that for eight players all season. He's on the practice squad injured reserve, and so they have a running back issue again. We'll know more about that on the injury report that comes out Wednesday and beyond. But we'll go ahead and wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Seared podcast. Mr. Cardinals Talk and Live. Seth and I will be back recording on Thursday to preview the Cardinals and the Browns. And maybe we'll have a better picture as to whether it's going to be Kyler or Clayton Tune. Oh, I'm assuming it's going to be Clayton Tune based on what Adam Schefter reported. But let's wrap this up. Thanks for listening as always. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise Up Seared podcast. We'll be back in a couple of days.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.